Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody, here on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Once again, this podcast is brought to you by Lewis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville. Give Lewis a call if you have any needs in the greater Jacksonville area, in the area of real estate. We'll talk a little bit more about that later and about what Lewis brings to the table. But for now, let's go ahead and get to the show. Got a dynamite show prepared for you today. Evaluating the Duke game. Evaluating where Florida State is moving from here after a wild weekend in which Clemson got upset at Syracuse. Tell you what, the ACC's really gotten better. Even the top teams are vulnerable against these mid and lower tier teams. It's a lot harder than it used to be. But also going to get to some question and answer at the end here, so let's go ahead and get to it. First thing I want to talk about, though, is some of the fan complaints out there about Jimbo and the way he's handled things in press conferences and the constant statements of confidence in the coaching staff and other things and, you know, people getting upset saying, you know, doesn't Jimbo notice? Doesn't he notice what's going on? How can he say that, you know, that he's confident in Charles Kelly or in what the coaches are doing or anything else? You know, and other people, just admit your mistakes, Jimbo. Just come around and admit that you made mistakes in hiring the coaches that you have or in keeping the coaches. Just tell us that you admit it, that you admit your mistakes and you know, show that you get it, and then, you know, we'll stop. Well, see, here's the problem. Is, first of all, you can't make changes during season. You're not going to make changes during season, especially not, you know, it's one thing if you have, say, a Sarkisian on your quality control staff, or if you have an experienced former head coach or defensive coordinator on your control on your quality control staff that you're looking at as a possible replacement anyway. Well, then, yeah, you might be able to make a change. If you don't have that, you can't make a change in season. And Florida State doesn't have that situation. So, yeah, that's one thing. So you can't make changes and acknowledge things that way during the season. Secondly, you also have to account that the part of the job that Jimbo's really concerned with right now is the actual coaching part of the job. And one part of coaching that is really important is the ABC of it. Always be selling, regardless of what you actually think. You have to send certain messages to your players. And that's through the media, through any other way of dealing with things. You have to make sure that you use those opportunities to send messages to your players. You have to make sure that your players understand that you are fully confident in what's going on. You're fully confident in how things are going, and that, you know, they're going to have to stay the course and listen and do what they're asked to do and make the improvements necessary over the course of the season, because you can't just throw the season out. You still have to play. You still have to make a bowl. You still have to compete for what you can compete for the remaining way. You want to win every game. Want to win every remaining game regardless. So you've got to send those messages. Jimbo's not going to come out and throw anybody under the bus at this point. At some point after the season, everybody's going to get to see what Jimbo actually thinks about the current situation. And I can tell you right now, Jimbo is not happy. He was very upset, is a good way to put it, I guess, after the Miami game. Behind the scenes, this is a dude that was expressing his outrage and frustration that Florida State lost to an inferior Miami team, that there was no excuse to lose to that team. So listen, the guy's saying the same sorts of things that fans are saying on this behind the scenes and understands what's going on. And the thing is, again, I've said this before, Jimbo is loyal to a point, but he is not loyal like a lot of fans seem to think, where, oh, you know, he's just going to make sure he keeps his friends on staff no matter the result. This guy, it will be cutthroat when it comes to winning. And as I've talked about, hindsight is one thing, but moving into the 2017 season, he believed he had a team that he was going to be able to win big with this coaching staff. Turns out that to have been wrong. But this was not a situation where he said, well, you know, I think we can do well enough with this coaching staff. We might not be able to, you know, be as good as we could be, but no, he thought that, you know, they'd turn the corner enough that they'd be able to give Bama all they could handle, probably win that game. They felt very good going into that game, and they gave Bama all they could handle, and then go to a playoff or win a national title this year. He really believed that. Now, hindsight, after losing to Miami, losing Francois, 21 days off, not getting the Louisiana Monroe game, all that stuff, playing the third best, maybe the second best team you're going to play all year, right off that 21 days rest with a true freshman quarterback, and, you know, having no opportunity to get any of that anything fixed before that in a game setting. Yeah, things went bad pretty quickly. So yeah, in hindsight, he could have made different decisions, but this is not a situation where if you make those decisions, you can't live in hindsight. You have to move forward. You have to make your declarations to the media of your confidence in where things are going and continue to send the messages to your team. Because the other thing is, again, as I've been saying on this podcast all along, this team's a lot closer to elite than it is to bad. And Jimbo knows that. There's just little things here and there, and there are a couple big things. But for the most part, it's little things here and there that are the difference between this team being elite and not. And again, the margins in college football are so thin. I don't think people really appreciate the different, like the margin between elite and just good and bad. Those margins can be really thin. I mean, you think about it. Florida State is really two plays away from being a one-loss team on, you know, ranked in the top. Probably five, maybe 10. It's certainly 10, maybe five. And you know, having a totally different perception around the program. Two plays. They're also two plays away from being 0-5 now. Those are thin margins, people. Very, very thin margins. They could be 0-5 if two plays had gone differently. Really, it'd have to be three plays, I guess, because Duke would have had to get the 2-point conversion. So three plays away from 0-5, and two plays away from 4-1, and being ranked probably in the top five. Well, those are margins, and the thing is, that affects all the perception of everything. That affects the perception of coaching staff. That affects the perception of program direction, all of that. And the problem is Florida State's played so close, too close on those margins for a really long time. And when you have the talent Florida State does, you can't afford to play on those margins. That's why the various changes that are going to be made that wouldn't have been made before the season, or that wouldn't have been made at the end of the season had they won the national title. There were going to be, as we've talked about on this podcast before, there were going to be a couple changes made after the 2017 season regardless. But they wouldn't have completely blown things up had they gone to the playoff or won a national title. Well, those changes are going to be made now because, again, once you get to the point where perception has become what it is, you're now behind the eight ball and you have to make some changes just for the ability to retain your message with players and recruiting and all sorts of other things. You have to change those things. So the second thing that I want to do here is I want to get to the straighter analysis of the Duke game. First things first is that Florida State fans should be a lot happier with the offense than the defense after this game. And I know, again, that sounds strange after a game that you win 17-10 and the offense only scored 17 points. The defense gave up 10 points against a team that was averaging a lot more. But again, sometimes the raw numbers can be a little deceiving. And ultimately, what I saw in this one, I saw that, first of all, Duke has a pretty good defense. That they'll get after you. They can put pressure on you. They've got a good defensive line. Not a great defensive line, but a good defensive line that can cause some havoc. They've got some good players on defense, and they're very well coached there, very disciplined. And Florida State averaged just under 7 yards per play against a very good defense. And that would have been higher with had Nooney Murray's long catch counted instead of being disqualified by the fact that Murray lined up wrong and it led to an ineligible man downfield. Continued mistakes from of that nature continue to be a problem for Florida State, but, you know, whatever. But on the flip side, the defense played against a Duke offense that is not good. That Duke offense is not good, and they'd been going backwards multiple games in a row. And Florida State gave up 5 yards per play against that bad offense. That's not good enough. That offense didn't average over 4 yards per play against Virginia. Virginia's got a good defense, everybody. They're well coached by Bronco Mendenhall and that staff. But Florida State can't give up 5 yards per play when Virginia's given up under four against that team. Sorry, that's just not excusable. The other thing is that this game only had 9 possessions. A normal game has, you know, 12, 14 possessions somewhere in there. And so you're going to get fewer points scored as a result. So that's partly due to Florida State's continued lack of high tempo, Florida State's pace. But the primary reason why there were only 9 drives in this game, there were other factors. There were 2 primary reasons, less to do actually with Florida State's pace in this game than other factors. But the main ones are that there was a lot of running the football on both sides and a lot of completions, not many incompletions to stop the clock. So that led to the game going extremely fast. I mean, the game was over in 3 hours. So that's number one. Number two is the Florida State defense is the primary reason that each of these teams only had nine drives. The Florida State defense didn't get off the field. They only had 2 3-and-outs out of 9 drives against a bad, and again, I'm going to say this is a bad Duke offense. It's not a good Duke offense. And you go down the drive chart, 6 plays, 17 yards. That's 6 plays for Duke running that clock. And Duke came in. They were going to try to slow this game down, keep it close, keep it close to the margins, because Cutcliffe's a smart coach, and he knows that if you have a talent deficit, you want that game to be shorter because you have more chances to win with fewer trials. The more plays that Florida State gets to run, the more likely they are to run the score up to get a few additional advantages. On the flip side, Florida State should be doing the opposite, but they really aren't right now. But, you know, I'm not going to carp on this every week, nor every year. I will talk about it a little bit, but, you know, this has been a subject on this podcast going all the way back. And, you know, even before this podcast, when I was writing for an old digest, this has been something, you know, we've talked about. But in any case, 6 plays, 17 yards, 15 plays, 66 yards, 7 plays, 49 yards, 6 plays, 19 yards, 7 plays, 75 yards, and a touchdown. And then finally, that, you know, well into the second half, the first 3-and-out, 3 plays, 6 yards. Then 6 plays, 30 yards, 3 plays, no yards, and then the final drive, 9 plays, 55 yards. That's just not good enough. If you're Florida State's defense, that is an unacceptable lack of domination against a bad Duke offense. You've got to get 3-and-outs. You've got to force them not to have 15, 7, 9 play drives. You can't let that happen. That's not excusable. It's not good enough to say, well, you know, we're keeping them out of the end zone. No. Get the ball back so that your offense can have the ball in decent field position. Florida State had awful field position all game. Average field position is around their own 20. Not going to score a ton of points, even averaging 7 yards a play, if you're constantly starting from, you know, your own 18-yard line. And that's where right now, again, Florida State is just they've not lived up to what expectations should be for that unit. Now, the interesting thing is that this game was kind of the opposite of the last two games, NC State and Miami, in terms of in those games, Florida State either completely dominated, lots of 3-and-outs, total domination, or give up the one really long drive or big situational play that cost you the game. So in this one, they didn't give up those big situational plays. They didn't give up the costly big play that cost you the game. But they didn't dominate pretty much at all. So, you know, they spread, Duke's success was spread over a bunch of drives that ultimately kind of fizzled out, as opposed to being concentrated in three or four drives that scored enough points to beat Florida State, which is what happened in the NC State and Miami games. But against this Duke team, it should have just been domination from start to finish. This is not a good Duke offense. This is a Florida State defense that should be able to dictate terms to that Duke offense and physically dominate them. But the defense is still way too reactive. I mean, they're playing against every team like they're playing against a Paul Johnson-style triple-option offense. Stay in position. Make sure you're playing your assignment. Don't give up anything big. You know, that kind of approach. Instead of do your assignment while you're attacking, while you're moving forward, while you're trying to physically dominate your opponent. You've got to attack and dictate against these modern offenses. You have to. And listen, I could understand, and some of you are wondering why I've not... And, you know, I've talked some about the lack of aggression at different points, but this is not something I've spent as much time on in the past. And you'd say, well, why not? I saw that they were doing this, you know, all the way back in 2014. Listen, I could understand some of this approach, playing it a little bit more carefully in 2014 and in 2016 because of the poor safety play and the weakness at linebacker on both of those teams. When you have issues in your back seven, you try to protect it. You try to protect your back seven by not taking some of the chances that you could take. You don't want to end up leaving guys on an island and doing some of those things. You know, I still remember, you know, Tyler Hunter, for example, giving up a long play on a double move against Louisville on the first play in 2014. And it's a situation where, you know, you get aggressive and then they double move you. And because you have some weaknesses in the back seven, you give up those plays. So, you know, I can understand not taking that quite as aggressive an approach when you have some of that lack of depth, some of those issues there. I get that. But what I don't understand, and the 2015 defense was really good. Now they played, you know, a weaker slate of offenses, but it was a really good defense. So less to complain about there. But Florida State doesn't have those personnel issues that they did in 2014 and 2016. The other thing is, in 2014, you had an offense that you knew as long as you didn't give up, you know, too many points, that offense was going to win for you. But Florida State doesn't have the personnel issues in the secondary and linebacker that they did in 2014 and 2016. It's inexcusable now. When you've got a full deck, when you've got Derwin James roving around out there, it's inexcusable not to be more aggressive and really get after teams and say, you know what, if you can beat our guys, then congratulations. That's what you got to do when you've got that personnel advantage. And they just continue to play it like they're, you know, we're worried about our personnel. Well, don't worry about your personnel. You've got great personnel. Attack. And you know, the best examples of this Duke game is maybe the best example of this in the last few years. Because Miami, you go back and you watch the Miami and Virginia games, and those two teams dominated Duke by playing press man pretty much the entire game. Getting physical with the Duke wide receivers, and Duke wasn't able to beat them over the top. Ball game. Loaded the box. Duke averaged less than 4 yards per play. Even UNC had some success doing that against this Duke offense. With their corners. Playing press. Getting after it a little bit. Whereas you look at, and there's some photos circulating on Twitter and other social media platforms as well right now of, you know, third and five. And Florida State's playing with two safeties at 15 yards deep. One on each hash, only one's visible. And then corners playing 10 yards off the ball on third and five. And their first steps are backing up. Whiskey, Tango, Foxtrot. What in the world is that? What are you thinking? It's third and five. And of course, they throw a quick hitch and it's an automatic completion for a first down. Well, geez. And that against a team that Miami and Virginia dominated by getting up and playing press man the whole game. And you've recruited a bunch of really good press man corners and won't do it in that situation? Explain this to me. And it's not late in the game. I've had people, you know, text me or message me on Twitter elsewhere saying, hey, can you explain why they're doing this? No, I can't explain that. That's just dumb. It's insane. You've got a couple of the best press man corners in the country and third and five, and you're playing it like it's third and 17. Well, I mean, actually, it'd be better if they played it like it was third and... It'd be awful if they played it like they've been playing third and 17. There's another third and short clip with corners playing 10 yards off the ball. That's unacceptable stuff. Get after it. Play man free on that third and five. And if they beat your corner over the top for 60, then live with it. There's no reason not to, though. Shut them down. Get it so that they can't get that first down. You get the ball back to your offense and let your offense go to work. And the real problem here is the force multiplier effect. And I know Bud Elliott has recently been talking about the stacking effect of going with slower pace and poor fourth down math. Well, there's an additional force multiplier effect here in terms of team of offense and defense, that when you're playing with a slow pace and then you're not going forward a bunch on fourth down, and you're playing defense that's allowing teams to convert third and five, third and six easily, that's a force multiplier one more time. Because once again, you're keeping your own team from having possession as often. If you're going to play with a slow pace, you should marry that with a defense that's going to really get aggressive and force teams to turn the ball over or, you know, go three and out and get the ball back quickly so that your offense can possess it and you get another possession or two that way. But what you can't do is play defense so that the other team is going to get 8-9 play drives, and then you're going to come back and play with a slow pace and not go forward on fourth down. All of those things stack together in a negative way. Bottom line is that the defense was not physical enough against the Duke running game. Load the freaking box against a team that can't beat you over the top. There were too many missed tackles still. The defensive line, overall, very good. Once again, not enough creativity in the pass rush still, though. Defensive ends are either speed rushing around the edge or they're just trying to compress the pocket. There's nothing really else. Get to it. Do some different things. Set up. Here's an idea. Set up a pass rush move once in a while. I know that's radical, but, you know, might want to try it. And through five games, Florida State, the defense has been excellent on first and second down. First and second down, they'll get you behind the sticks. They'll win first and second down. Your success rate's gonna be poor. But boy, once it gets to third and long, they're not making you pay for getting in third and long. They're worse on third and long than they are on second and four. It's backwards from the way that things normally work. And to me, that reflects the passive, don't make a mistake approach that they're taking on defense right now. So instead of saying our talent is so good that we're gonna play with abandon and, you know, we'll live with the mistake once in a while, they're saying our talent is so good that we just have to not make mistakes. And to me, listen, the problem is that on third and long on these things, they stop attacking. When they are attacking on first and second down, they're really dang good. But on third down, they stop attacking. And what they've got to do is they've got to keep attacking on third down and live with the occasional mistake that's the consequence of playing aggressively. That's where they need to go. We'll see if any adjustments get made there before the season's up. But that's what has to happen. On the offensive side, the offense, like I said, was pretty good. Only scored 17 points. They should have scored about 38. Kept getting in their way. I mean, again, the identity of this offense, they found an identity, and that is run the football really well between the 20s, say between the 30s at least, and then find a way to shoot themselves in the foot once they get into scoring position. That is the identity of this offense. Now, I got to give Jimbo credit, and this is the second time that he's made these changes. I know back in 2012, after I had put some things together on this, and I read those on one of the last podcasts, two podcasts ago, I know Jimbo quickened the tempo and made some changes for a while after that, and then things sort of slowed back to their usual crawl. And I have no doubt that this week, Jimbo came in with the intention of going with a faster tempo, and you could see that on the first drive, and it looked great. Got to give him credit. But things, once they got off script, once they got out of the scripted portion, well, things slowed down again. And that is the difference, by the way. That first drive was scripted. They're still in their scripted plays. And when they were in their scripted plays and they knew, okay, we did this, we had success on that one, okay, next play on the script, when they did that and they were able to snap the football before 15 seconds on the clock and they moved quickly. Best drive they've had all year. And then once they got out of the script and they started thinking about what to call and discussing it on the phones. And then, you know, Jimbo's asking Sanders, what do you want to call? And then Sanders gives his call. And then, you know, okay, yeah, I think that's a good one. All right, let's go with that one. And then all of a sudden, by the time that gets signaled in, then, you know, you're back down snapping it with single digits on the clock. Once Duke adjusted and once they were outside the prepared script, they slowed down again. And again, this is where if you're going to play at a higher tempo, that has to be a program commitment. You have to be committed to this is how we're going to take each thing. Now, one thing I will say is that some of the slowing down, now, once they slowed down, it was obvious that they didn't have as much success. Now, I'm going to say that some of that it goes the other way in that some of what the reason that they slowed down is that they had a little bit less success than they did on that first drive. So they... It sort of reinforces itself, but they never found a way to pick the pace back up. And that's something, again, they've got to be able to do. That said, James Blackman, best game he's played as a Florida State player. You know, you look back at his last five quarters and that kid has been balling. And he was 18 for 21 against Duke. 18 for 21. Only 197 yards, but still 9.4 yards per attempt, which is really good. Unfortunately, two of the three incompletions were actually complete to the other team. One bad decision on a misread, and then another where he was trying to throw the football away and didn't do it well. But look at his last five quarters. He's 27 of 31 for three scores, three picks. That's pretty good. Kid's starting to come around. So that's a positive. And that allows them to have a little more flexibility to call what they want. Now, right now, they're starting to hone in on what Blackman's really comfortable with. You could see them moving the pocket, running some waggles and things like that. A lot of play action, boot type stuff, which also, by the way, helps the offensive line get angles in the running game, similar to the way that running the quarterback does, because they have to account for the quarterback on the boot. So that's almost like giving yourself an extra... at least half blocker in the running game. And, you know, it gives him a chance for some easy reads downfield, to be able to make some downfield throws in easy reads. And if they can pick up the tempo a little bit so that teams can't throw more exotic looks at them, then that's going to make things even easier for Blackman with some of those concepts. And boy, he flashed the arm on a few occasions. That throw to Izzo when he got hit and should have been an ejection for targeting. That was a heck of a throw. To me, one of the throws that was just jaw-dropping was there was a little quick out to Noonie Murray on third down where he threw a ball that was about 40, it's about a 35, 40-yard throw, and he threw it on a rope and got it to Murray for a first down, and that's a throw not many kids can make. Not many quarterbacks make that throw. So kids coming around and it's helping now. It's helping the offensive line. It's helping the running backs. It's allowing Florida State to play a little bit more balanced football. And that's going to pay off over the next few games. And the other guy that's really come around, this is Cam Akers' best game by far. It's the first full game that he's actually been the better running back than Jaquez Patrick. He basically caught Patrick in that regard. They were about equal in success rate and all that, and in how well they ran against Miami. But Akers was clearly the more efficient back, the better back against Duke. And that's the first time this year that Akers has been the more efficient running back than Patrick. And that's not because Patrick has been getting worse. Patrick played really well. Florida State ran for over 200 yards against a Duke defense that hasn't been giving up a lot of rushing yards. And Akers, boy, yeah. Everything, he's starting to look like everything he was advertised to be, everything he looked like he would be coming out of high school. That said, I still would like to see Amir Rasul get more carries than he has. Glad to see him back on kick returns, but he needs to get some more carries as well. But again, you can't get more carries when you're only getting 9 drives. You know, you get 12, 13, 14 drives, and maybe you get 2 drives where you can give Rasul more burn. Right now, not a whole lot of carries to go around if you're only getting 9 drives. Offensive line in this game mostly dominated the game, frankly. Very good performance by the offensive line. Once again, they've played some quality football in the year. That said, still a few miscues here and there, a penalty here, a false start there. There's one play where Florida State has it set up perfectly, and center Alec Eberle just happens to stumble and give up a free runner to Blackman. Blackman has to check down. If Blackman doesn't have to check down, it's probably a touchdown to Noonie. And it's stuff like that that's just so close to just Florida State being a really, really efficient offense. And there's always just one little thing at this point. It's the penalties and the small miscues. Again, Noonie Murray gets a big play in the passing game. Great throw on an over route or a drive route from Blackman. Gets called back because Murray lined up offside or lined up on the line of scrimmage when he should have been off. You know, and you get a ineligible receiver downfield on Izzo that's really on the receiver for covering him up. Come on, guys. I mean, that's the stuff that holds you back from being elite. It's that stuff. That's the real difference. That and refusing to, you know, say, play press man on 3rd and 5 instead of giving up a huge cushion. Those are the things that right now are holding this team back. But they're really close. They're very close. All right, let's go ahead and burn through some question and answer here at the end. Do some mailbag stuff. First couple questions from WarChant37 on Twitter. What's the ideal time to have on the play clock when the ball is snapped? I know it's situational, but talking generally. I think a good rule of thumb for Florida State is that in general, the ball should be snapped with double digits on the clock. If there's more than 10 seconds left on the clock when the ball is snapped, then I think they've gotten everything in smoothly. They've been able to line up and get the ball snapped before a team is able to do a whole lot of disguise and movement or whatever. I think that's a good rule of thumb. My preference would be for Florida State to snap the football around 14, 15 seconds on average. I think that's a good tempo for your normal tempo. When you're going, warp speed, when you're trying to go really fast, Those teams are snapping the football with, you know, 25 seconds on the clock. I don't think Florida State's really going to be there except on occasion in a two-minute situation. But I think, again, ideally for me, a good target is 14, 15 seconds on the clock. And I think it's fine as long as there's double digits on the clock. I think they really, things have bogged down and things are moving too slow if there's single digits on the clock. I think that's the good rule of thumb. Okay, next question. Should Jay Graham be retained? Personally, yes. Running back showing great improvement. Cam settling for 2 yards when bouncing for loss before. So he's highlighting that, you know, Cam has been showing improvement. I really don't like to get into should this coach be retained or not discussions. So I'm going to take a pass on that one. I'll just say this, that as a general rule, Fisher understands who is coaching well on his staff and is willing to make the hard calls on some of those things when the coach is not living up to what he needs to. So, you know, Graham is a, I will say this, Graham is a good to very good running backs coach. Now, running backs is maybe the easiest position to coach. Most programs can stash an elite recruiter there because it's not a hard position to coach. Like I said, though, he's a good to very good coach at that position. I think he has shown to be a poor special teams coach. So if they do retain him, he should not be the special teams coordinator. So I'll just say that. And he's not a great recruiter. He's a good one. So, you know, that if you're trying to stash a great recruiter at running back because it's not a hard position to coach, that's another situation. But he's a good enough and, you know, a good to very good recruiter at that position, but not great. All right. Next question from Garnet and Great on Twitter. Is it time for Ermin Lane to move back to wide receiver, especially if Frosh don't work out? I would say no. Leave Lane at the safety position. He's been pretty good there. Although I will say there have been more miscommunications between him and Tavares McFadden when they're on the same side and when they're on the field together than probably any other two players on the Florida State defense. And I'm not sure why that is, but it seems like those two have not really communicated all that well at different points. And you can see that, you know, in the one big third down conversion that Miami had on a cover two call. That's got to be Lane getting over there. And those guys didn't really hand off the coverage real well. The communication wasn't the best. And, you know, that's, yeah, been a few examples where one guy's been in one coverage or one guy's been out of position and they just haven't communicated super well. Not sure why that is, but it's one thing that's been noticeable. All right, next question. Oh, this is a good one. What would the records be if Clemson and Florida State flipped coaching staffs? That's a really hard question because a lot of things you have to take into account there. Are we talking about Clemson and Florida State's coaching staffs flip, but, you know, Clemson's coaching staff still has to deal with the Blackman injury? Are we assuming that Francois stays healthy through the Bama game? So I'm going to assume that basically the personnel stuff has come out more or less the same and that then, you know, you still had to deal with the hurricane and some of these other things. So I would say if those two staffs flipped, I would say Clemson would still be 5-1 against their schedule, and Florida State would probably be 3-2 instead of 2-3. I think that would be the difference. So there'd be one win difference for Florida State, and Clemson would be the same. And again, I think this is basically one more instance of strength of schedule matters. And also coaching staff perception. I've talked about this a lot. Coaching staff perception is steered so much by dumb luck. Everybody wants to point to Clemson's coaching staff as, you know, the standard bearer in the ACC right now, but nobody would be pointing at the Clemson coaching staff as that standard bearer had NC State kicked a 33-yard field goal at the end of regulation in Death Valley last year. And then you look at the difference in schedule between the two teams this year. Florida State has played 5 teams with winning records, including 3 top 15 to 20 teams and the nation's number one team. Florida State has beaten more winning teams than Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, and Wisconsin combined. Those teams haven't played winning teams, and when they have, they've lost. Interesting. Clemson has played a hard schedule, but nowhere near as difficult as Florida State's. They played two top 20 teams, Auburn and Virginia Tech, but Auburn has shown themselves to be very flawed offensively. They wouldn't. That's not a team that would be dominating Florida State's defense. They play right into Florida State's hands defensively. I think Florida State's staff would have gotten Auburn. And Virginia Tech, I think, is okay, but Florida State staff probably gets the win in that one. They may not have. I think Florida State staff probably gets the same win against Louisville. And then, you know, if Syracuse played like they did, that's probably where Florida State staff gets upset. And again, people are up in arms about not winning the games that you should. So I figure probably 5-1, same way that they are. And again, Clemson struggled to the same Wake Forest team against the same Wake Forest team Florida State did. And that was without Wake Forest starting quarterback that FSU had knocked out the week before. And look what happened as soon as Clemson didn't have a healthy Bryant against Syracuse. So how well would they cope with having to deal with the Francois injury and going to Blackman? So I think Florida State staff would probably be 5-1 against Clemson's schedule with Clemson's roster. And then if Clemson staff had to deal with playing Alabama in the opener, losing its quarterback, and then a 21-day layoff before playing NC State without a lower-tier dress rehearsal, I think they probably lose their first two games and then beat Miami. I don't think the Clemson staff would have lost to Miami. I think they probably would have lost to Alabama and would have had a good chance of losing to NC State just like they should have last year. With that 21-day layoff, no dress rehearsal, 18-year-old freshman quarterback, all those factors, I think they probably end up losing that game as well with this roster and wind up 3-2, beating Miami, Wake Forest, and Duke. So those are big factors. So am I saying in this that Florida State's coaching staff is as good as the Clemson staff or is as good as it should be? No. But I am saying that perception has outstripped reality in terms of the gap between the staffs. And I also think that because the perception has changed so much and the perception has run away so far, that perception has sort of paradoxically become reality. So, you know, at that point, once you get to a certain point of perception, again, once you get to the place where recruits are starting to question whether or not, you know, the staff is right, once you get to the place, you know, well, do I really want to play for that coach because, you know, he's not been producing a lot of NFL talent or whatever. Once you get there, then changes have to be made, even if the coach is a good coach. And, you know, I know for a fact that Jimbo has called around a little bit and has been gauging interest. I know of at least two coaches that he's contacted so far, gauging potential interest for after the season. Okay, next thing. Next question from Colby Wright. Have you ever watched a game and thought our defensive coordinator had a solid game plan or a great week of preparation? It's a good question. And actually, I had to think about it for a second. But yeah, I have. The last two Clemson games, I thought Charles Kelly had a really good plan. Actually, the last three Clemson games, I thought the Florida State staff had a great plan. Going back to 2014 when they had to do it without Jameis Winston. I thought the games against Clemson the last 3 years, I'd say the Michigan game last year, maybe one or two others. I think the Georgia Tech game in 2015. They're a handful, but certainly not enough. There have been enough games that have had the opposite response, such as this Duke game, where this is a really poor game plan and a poor week of preparation, very obviously. So, you know, yes, there have been a number of cases, a few of them, and in some key games where I've said, yeah, that's they really had a good plan. And then there have been a few cases where I've gone the other way. Good question, though. Thomas Robinson on Facebook asks, few questions I'd appreciate you to tackle, even if you only choose just one. First, do you think Jimbo should use the hurry up at times and maximize the talent and depth advantage FSU typically has? I'm not saying going full on hurry up, no huddle, but at least using it more than he does. I've addressed that the last three podcasts. This was written right as I was releasing the other one, the first one on the hurry up, no huddle stuff and on tempo. So I think it's pretty clear at this point that I do think that. I've talked to Jimbo about that in the past. This is something that I think needs to happen. I agree that I don't think that they need to go full on hurry up, no huddle. I don't actually agree with that philosophy as a all game, go hurry up, no huddle, you know, try to snap the ball at the fastest pace all the time. I think you need to be able to run multiple paces, but I think they'd be a lot better off if they snap the ball at, 14, 15 seconds on average rather than at, four. So, and I think, again, that is precisely to maximize the talent and depth advantage Florida State has. All right, second question was, why do you think the team, for a lot of Jimbo's tenure, tends to get in dogfights with supposedly inferior teams? Is it pace of play, the process, treating all opponents the same in theory, but perhaps you play up or down to competition, the ACC getting better, or some combo? I would say, number one, is the ACC has gotten a lot better. The teams that Florida State has played and that a lot of fans over the years have been saying, oh, how can you even be in a dogfight with that game or with that team? They're terrible. Well, first of all, they're not as bad as a lot of fans tend to think in most of these cases. And it's because the conference has gotten better. Florida State has played the toughest schedule in the country this year so far. It probably was the toughest schedule in the country last year because of the quarterbacks that they played. The ACC has been a uniquely good quarterback league, which allows inferior teams in other respects to play up once in a while. When you've got an elite quarterback, that can cover a lot of flaws, and they've played a lot of really good quarterbacks. So that's level of competition has been a factor. But I don't think that's it entirely. I think pace of play, I think Fisher's approach of fourth down math actually is one of the biggest ones. I think Fisher has cost himself in non-Jameis years. I think Fisher has cost himself one win a year by his fourth down math decisions. One win per year. In 2012, they beat NC State if he makes the correct fourth down decision on two occasions. On either of two occasions. If he makes the correct fourth down decision, they win that game. I think they lost the Georgia Tech game in 2015, in large part due to some of those decisions. I think they lost the NC State game this year, in part because of those decisions. I think they lost the North Carolina game last year, in large part because of those decisions early, to kick field goals when they should have gone for it, deep in UNC territory. So, I think he's cost himself a full win a year by fourth down math. I'll say that again. I think Fisher, I think, is a top five coach in the country, head coach. But I think he's cost himself one win per year, excluding 2015 and 2013 and 2014. Excluding those years, I think he's cost himself basically one win a year by his fourth down math decisions. And then you add in pace to that, and you're looking at maybe another third of a game or so every year. Because again, losing some opportunities to maximize your talent and depth and maybe get an extra drive that could be the difference against a team that through a small number of trials was able to stick with you. But, and then the third factor is that Florida State is the game on so many teams' schedule. And when you are that team's Super Bowl and you can't prepare for every team like they're the Super Bowl, you have to retain wrinkles and all that for your few big rivalry games. Those teams are throwing in the kitchen sink against you. NC State has done it year after year. Boston College has done it year after year. Syracuse has typically, even though they've not been good enough to maximize it, these teams are bringing in stuff that Florida State hasn't seen. Nobody's seen, because they're saving it for Florida State to try to get that program-changing win. So, again, that's why a lot of times, and I've talked about this, I talked about this a couple of years ago, when you're the game on everybody's schedule, a lot of times you're going to have to weather the storm early, because those teams are going to come in throwing blows in those situations.
You're going to see things that you haven't seen all year. You're going to have to prepare on your team to see a lot more stuff, a lot of wrinkles, a lot of tendency breakers, and you have to be ready for anything, and you have to be ready to adjust on the fly on the sideline. And it's, you know, that's one of the reasons that that top teams sometimes get upset by the teams at the very bottom, even. Because again, you're seeing a different team against that team than anybody else is. So then when the bottom is starting to get better, that gets all the more difficult for those teams at the top. So it's a factor of a combination of things, but I think those factors that I just listed are the primary ones. And actually, there's one other one I should probably mention, and that's that Florida State's culture. I still think that the culture of the program changed in 2014, in particular, when they had a lot of players who started checking out for the NFL, and there were some times where some of those things were overlooked in order to pursue the title. And instead of getting those guys on the bench or subbing a guy out and dealing with some of the issues there, some of those guys are able to skate by on some things that I think that set the tone for some other things moving forward. And that again gets back to why I was so emphatic last year that it's not a good thing when a guy like Nooney is not giving everything in practice or is you know not doing everything that he's asked to do. He shouldn't be playing over a guy like Bobo Wilson. You have to establish your program that way, so that guys are going to be held accountable. And there's been, at different points, less accountability than what Jimbo Fisher would really like in his program. And I think the culture there has also been a factor at different points as FSU's played some of these lesser teams. Okay, then the final question from Thomas Robinson. Finally, do you think Jimbo's recruiting pitch of sending guys to the NFL could fall on deaf ears or at least be neutralized as teams that utilize gimmicky offenses send more and more players to the NFL? My thought on that is, to some degree, yes. I mean, you're seeing teams like Clemson, for example, get more recruits at, say, the quarterback position, thanks to a guy like Deshaun Watson showing that you can play out of that system and then go on to the NFL and not only go on to the NFL and be drafted highly, but do well. You know, North Carolina with Mitch Trubisky running their more college-y spread offense as well. Although, again, North Carolina and Clemson do a lot of, you know, downfield NFL-style passing stuff that a lot of people don't realize. I mean, their receivers make route adjustments and all sorts of things as well. So, and again, I've said this before. I said this when I got back from it in the spring. I still say that the Clemson practice I went to was the best coached wide receiver practice I have ever seen. So that tells you something in terms of their ability to develop and use those things and be able to teach those concepts. To me, I think, though, at the end of the day, the recruiting pitch of sending guys to the NFL is still going to work as long as you're sending guys to the NFL and they're getting drafted. You may not be able to say, well, you know, choose us over, say, Clemson, because we'll put you in the NFL and they won't. But I'm not sure how much impact that ultimately was going to have to begin with, in that, you know, those programs, the other programs that have run quote unquote gimmicky offenses have sent guys to the NFL for quite a while. I still think that with the quarterback reputation that Fisher has and with, you know, the number of guys that he's managed to send to the NFL, that still remains a strong marketing component. I think the running back position is going to continue to recruit itself because of the success of Florida State running backs in the NFL. I think it's still going to be a factor, but I do think that maybe the one thing that gets lessened a little bit is the ability to point to some of these other offenses in college football and say, well, you know, you're less likely to make the NFL from there, or they're not going to develop you for the NFL as well there, when some of those programs can neutralize that a little bit by pointing to some of the successes that they've had. Yeah, I do think that's a factor, but I think FSU can still highlight that, you know, we will have you more prepared than these other teams and you know, bring out the articles and so on about these different things from NFL teams. All right, well, that's going to do it for us today. Once again, this podcast is sponsored by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville. Lewis is a trained photographer, videographer. Make sure that you, if you're going to list your home in the Jacksonville area and you don't list with Lewis, you're making a mistake. If you want to see some of his unreal photography and videography on some of the places that he'll list, links are going to be in the show notes to get a look at some of that stuff. If you have any needs in the real estate, in the avenue of real estate in the greater Jacksonville area, support the podcast and your fellow Seminoles. Give Lewis a call. Let him know that you heard about him on this podcast. And we'll all benefit from that. You will benefit from it as well because you'll get the best deal possible. Anyway, like I said, that's going to wrap this show. This has once again been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.